right.
We're trying to bond with Representative Johnson. I heard all of these are hiding under the desk of
19 guns. Colleagues, House Committee on Revenue for May 18, 2017 will come to order. The plan at this moment is to deal with the public hearing on House Bill 2064. We've got a number of people signed up on that bill. So let's start with that public hearing. We'll open the public hearing, House Bill 2064. Give us the short version. I think this is one with a number of amendments that we're considering, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that's correct. Mr. Chair, the bill, the original bill, if you recall, it was heard back on February 13th. And it primarily talks about LRO doing a review and a study. However, since this was the subject, I guess it became a host for a number of amendments. And the amendments that you have posted here, we have the dash one, dash two, and the dash four. And the dash one primarily allows for the transient lodging tax to be used for tourism-related activities, including beautification projects and so on. And then the language around the percentage spent in tourism in the local government for the tax increases changes. And then providing the cost of maintaining tourism-related facilities to allowable use, the price definition to include charges and services. It also includes segregation from the travel package. That is, if there is a travel package that you pay, so the cost that you pay the tax on would be segregated from the travel package. The collector who's responsible also is part of that amendment. And then you have the dash two amendment that talk about the new local tax on tourism related activities going from 70% to 50%. That is part of the local government's moratorium that actually requires 70% of all new taxes to go to tourism promotions. So this changes that percentage to 50%.
And what is the other 50% allowed to be spent on?
Allowed to be spent on other activities of that general fund for the cities.
I see.
So it was 70-30 in the past, now right. It's 50-50. That amendment allows for that. And then the dash four establishes joint and several liability for tax delinquencies and changes the definition of intermediaries to capture the ones that are thought are not covered under the current definitions. So these are the amendments that you have.
Okay, let me make sure I understand. The dash four does something with liability issues?
Yes.
What does it do?
It has, and this is also included in the dash ones. It includes the joint and several liabilities for tax delinquencies. So if you look at the amendment, if you want to see how the language works, this basically goes to.
I got you. It's the very end of the bill, right. Of the amendment.
Very end of the amendment, where it makes those determinations. And also, and the end of the first page of the amendment, you have that change in the definition of the intermediaries. This is on lines 23 to 27.
I'm sorry, which amendment?
The same amendment, the dash four amendment. So it's three. You have the amendment that's four pages. The end of the third page line 22 down to line 27 is the amended language.
Ah, I see. They're adding to the definition of a transient lodging intermediary.
That is correct.
Frank, thank you. Any questions for Mazin before we go ahead? Thank you. So let's go ahead with... I'd like to call the mayor of Ashland along with the other city people. So why don't you give him that call? And we'd also include in our first panel Wendy Johnson and Eric Kankler, City of Bend. And Ashland wasn't ready to drive, so we're getting Mayor John Stromberg on the telephone. Is this Mayor Stromberg?
Yes, indeed.
Mayor Stromberg, I'm Phil Barnhart. I'm the chair of the House Revenue Committee. You're on the telephone in the public session of the House Revenue Committee and includes nine members at the dais. And I've asked you to, since you asked to testify on House Bill 2064, I put you in a panel with Wendy Johnson, who is the represents the League of Oregon Cities, and Eric Kankler, who represents the city of Bend. And we'll take you in order, and I think we'll start with one of the people who are here. Wendy?
Great, thank you all.
If you'll just hang on, and when we get to you, state your name for the record and then give your testimony. But we're going to hear from Ms. Johnson first.
Great, thank you very much.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Wendy Johnson. Here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities, the League supports the Dash 1 amendment that would replace the bill. As staff has explained, this bill would provide more flexibility to local governments on how they use their local tax, their local lodging tax dollars. Several of you have heard this bill, the topic before, so I won't go into a lot of the sordid history, but the local lodging tax has been imposed by cities and counties, some of them since the 1930s, some of them very recently. And so how much is restricted by state law is totally varies by where when the tax was imposed, because the state preempted cities in 2003. The city and county taxes range from 2% to 13.5%, and then how much is restricted totally varies. Rather than try to change all the preemptions on the percentages and things, because each city and county is different on how much revenue they bring in and how much is restricted, because everything was frozen in 2003, and then if you did a new tax, it's the 70-30. Trying to undo all those complicated things, we decided a fair way to deal with this problem is to tackle the definitions and try to find those things that all could agree are supporting tourism and will improve the tourism economy and keep Oregon going forward with its tourism, and rather than try to change the percentages. So what the bill with the Dash 1 amendments would do is change the definition of tourism promotion. That's important because the restricted revenues that a city or county has, whatever their percentage might be, goes into two buckets. It has to either be tourism promotion or tourism facilities. Most of our smaller cities and counties do not have a tourism facility because that term is so narrowly defined to be a convention center or a tourism center or something, and most cities and counties don't have them. So then they have to use the other bucket, which is the tourism promotion bucket, and as that is defined, it's very much focused on marketing. And the reason is, back in 2003, we didn't have anything on the books for marketing until the state tax came into being, and then now the Oregon Travel Oregon, our state's tourism agency, has marketed since 2003. But before that, there were no restrictions, but cities and counties used a lot of their money oftentimes for marketing. But rather than let cities and counties continue to make their decisions themselves, the 2003 legislation preempted us all and said you have to continue to use it for these things with this marketing focus. And so we're coming back now and saying, we got to make our decisions before and we made decisions regarding marketing then. We should still be trusted with that now. But we'd like to lift it all together, but we know that's not particularly politically feasible. So instead we did this definition changes. So With respect to facilities, all we're adding there is to clarify that you can use money for the restricted money for maintenance of facilities. That's a pretty easy change. And then with respect to tourism promotion, we're expanding the definition to include, and this is in my testimony, the first star, that it would include tourism activities, tourism generating special events, sporting events, and festivals that are designed to encourage tourism or accommodate tourists. You might ask, well, where did that language come from? Well, it came from how the state can now use its tourism dollars from the lodging tax dollars, which, as you know, in the 2016, it was the tax was increased from 1% to 1.8, and now state lodging tax dollars can be used for these special events and sporting events and festivals and things. So we think at minimum this definition makes sense. It's parallel with the state, and it makes sense to use lodging tax dollars for tourist events and such. The second change, which would be the second star in my testimony, is that would also be allowed, the restricted part would be allowed to be used to cover costs for developing or improving the tourist industry by enhancing tourist attractions, tourism-related facilities, or tourism-generated special events, including but not limited to beautification projects and constructing or improving tourist amenities. So these are the things that are in the city or county that are used by the tourists that are tourist amenities, to make sure that when they're in our cities and counties for tourism, that they have a welcome stay there. Right now, many of our cities and counties are strapped in their budgets, some not as much. It's up to those cities and counties to make those decisions on where they make those cuts. And right now, we fear that these very things are being cut. And so it makes sense, rather than to continue putting it towards marketing only, to have some flexibility to use for these costs that are listed. And I already explained the facilities. In short, we have a few communities that have literally been loved to death since we really improved our tourism industry. Bend and Ashland are the poster children for going from tourism where it was in 2003 to more than double today. And so that means the lodging tax dollars have also doubled or more than doubled. The figure was, in 2003, we were around $70 million statewide for local taxes. Today, we're over $150 million for local lodging taxes. But the percentages have been stuck where they were in 2003. And so now those revenues have grown so much, but they're still restricted. We want the message to be received that we're not trying to take away money from tourism. We just think that marketing in and of itself is not the only way to continue to improve tourism. We need to make sure that tourists continue to come, and it's not we don't lose our growth because of what our communities are looking like and the attractions they have. We want to continue to develop the tourism industry. So we think that this should be seen as a partnership, not a negative. It's just, what is the city? We see this as city and county taxes, and we're not the best promoters of tourism either. And at some point, you can't promote a city when it's full in the summer. We need to have a good experience. The second part that this bill deals with is something that's come about because of technology. It used to be very easy to get the lodging tax dollars from the local hotels and motels and resorts. Our cities and counties had relationships with them and would audit and visit each hotel and motel itself. Now we have what are called intermediaries, entities that take the rooms that haven't been booked and work to get those booked. And it's all done over the internet, and there's so many of them. You'll have the main one perhaps in the US, and another one in another country that's a subsidiary, and it gets incredibly complicated after a while. And then each one is using different platforms to do those bookings. And then add on to that, back in 2003, when the legislation passed, we didn't have this proliferation of the non-traditional lodging facilities, meaning your homes being rented out. And so that wasn't anticipated at all. So in 2013, the legislature tried to take a stab at to impose the tax on these intermediaries that were renting in large quantities, lots of rooms or homes. But we didn't quite get all the folks covered, and partially because the industry keeps changing. So the second part of the bill really deals with that, to redefine transient lodging intermediary. Our goal from the city perspective is to just make sure everybody pays the tax. We don't want to discriminate on what type of platform or what your entity is. We just want to make sure the tax gets paid, and it makes the most sense to have these entities, these intermediaries pay rather than individual homeowners or individual hotels that have given that job to the intermediary. So it makes sense for the intermediary to pay, and that's what the amendments would do. We have some intermediaries that are paying our cities. We have others that are not. We have still others that are paying some and not others based on an agreement. And our position is that we shouldn't have to have an agreement to be paid a tax. We should be paid the tax because the legislature and our cities and counties have decided that they would impose a lodging tax and that all should pay. So we don't believe we should have to have an agreement to have the tax. So with this amendment, it would clarify who has to pay, and it has three different definitions, the existing one for intermediary and then adding two other components to deal with those types of entities, some that take a fee or commission and some that collect the actual money for the room. My written testimony is online, but I would just highlight that this is not a one-size-fits-all state, and the 2003 legislation that preempted us all has made it very complicated and unfair. Some cities are preempted at zero, and some are at 100%, and so this is trying to at least allow flexibility for those that have the restriction. Second, we don't view this as taxes that belong to lodging providers or restaurants. We view this as a tax that belongs to the community, and they have different needs. But that also means that just providing this flexibility doesn't mean that a city or county will actually change what they're doing. We did a survey, and many of our cities and counties said they would not change their distributions. They would continue to allocate it how they are for promotion, for other choices. So again, it will be a budget decision that happens at the local level. And the Restaurant Lodging Association and the industry will have their chance again there to debate that on how the dollars are spent. But right now, the state has taken away that debate altogether by the preemptions. There's been an argument that this will change the market share, and this is going down a slippery slope. We haven't seen any data to show that these choices that we're suggesting are going to hurt the market share by improving the tourism attractions and tourism events. We're concerned that if we don't change something, we'll actually have to stop certain events. And so how can that help the tourism industry? So we would just encourage you not to buy the slippery slope argument. I think that concludes my comments, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Eric Kanzler, representing the city of Bend. I think I'm going to start misspelling my name with an S instead of a C.
Thank you.
It's a 50-50 proposition.
It is, and yeah. I chose the hard C Latin pronunciation instead. Sorry.
Thank you. So we're here to support both the base bill and the dash one, or I guess effectively the dash one at this point, as to the base concept that Wendy finished up with there. Many local governments have had trouble collecting taxes that are owed to them. Naturally, we're supportive of bringing in that revenue. Primarily, I want to speak to the dash one and the manner in which it would offer added flexibility to local governments, again, as Wendy stated, to diversify our tourism investments, not to allow us to divest in tourism. Quite briefly, because she went through them already, we'd be allowed to invest in tourism events and related costs associated with them. Many of these events are the lifeblood of tourism in Bend, for example, the Cascade Cycling Classic, the Pole Pedal Paddle, many other events that I'm sure you're all familiar with. Some of them are struggling very much. Maintenance of established tourism facilities, not just their initial construction. That's frankly not an issue for the city of Bend, but I know it is for Deschutes County. They have an aging fairground, and they like to be able not only to invest in the creation of facilities, but the ongoing upkeep and maintenance of those facilities as well. The bill would allow for beautification projects, Wendy, Ms. Johnson mentioned. Generally speaking, again, it would align with 4146 from last session. And lastly, it would help clarify the extent of limitations that singled out Bend in legislation in 2003 and treated us uniquely unfairly. So the future of tourism in Bend is not necessarily going to be in new facilities. It's going to be, in a lot of cases, in the continued success and the growth of the events that we hold, and it's going to be in the quality and the upkeep of our natural and our outdoor amenities. These are some of the primary drivers of tourism in Bend. It's also going to be in the ability for us to balance the benefits of tourism with the negative impacts and the costs of tourism. We believe the dash one in fairly narrow ways would allow us to achieve these outcomes. And we also anticipate, and I think this is very important to note, that the changes that we would consider, and we frankly don't know exactly what we would do with the flexibility yet. I tend to think we would largely, as Ms. Johnson suggested, continue to market. We'd continue to do a variety of things that have proven successful, but it would allow us to do other things that we believe would have the benefit of filling beds. And that, of course, would translate to more revenue in the form of transient lodging taxes collected. So at present, we are locked into a pretty vicious cycle where we, when our tourism increases, our marketing increases, and our tourism increases more and our marketing increases more. We are unable effectively to get out of that cycle. And frankly, many folks in the community don't believe us when we tell them that state statute prevents us from making that choice. It doesn't make sense to them. They say, we, Bend is marketing itself. We don't need to market ourselves any more than we're already doing. And we have many other glaring needs throughout the community. This doesn't make sense. So cities didn't like the legislation, as Ms. Johnson pointed out, in 2003, didn't support it. I think we have to admit, however, it did accomplish the tremendous goal of helping tourism succeed in this state. We don't question that. We, however, think that we've entered a new era and that the state ought to consider hitting reset on this issue in the ways that we've suggested. What it's really doing is holding us back from solving local problems on the local level. And as you know, most of the time, this body tells us to try to do that very thing. In this case, we really can't. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mayor Stromberg, it's now your turn. If you'll state your name for the record and then give your testimony.
And members of the committee, thank you for taking the time to listen to me. I'm John Stromberg, and I'm the current mayor of Ashland, Oregon, just starting my third term. I'm speaking today only in my role as mayor, and I'm not representing the views of the city council, which hasn't had time to review this draft, nor to seek public input. I want to say that not only are we a poster child for Oregon, but we are the first impression poster child that people coming from the South often encounter. More on this in a moment. I support the new and improved Dash 1 draft of HB 2064 and can describe its potential impact on Ashland in specific terms. You are probably aware how much Ashland's appeal depends on how it looks. Every winter, we try to freshen up our appearance in anticipation of our nine-month-long Shakespeare Festival season. We currently have allocated $265,000 of TOT tourism money in the upcoming biennium to the category, quote, other city tourism eligible capital projects, unquote. What we would like to spend it on, however, is non-capital flower baskets, which is a service, painting light standards, refurbishing planter boxes, and the like in commercial areas of town frequented by the 300,000 tourists who visit Ashland each year, and for most of whom Ashland is their first impression of Oregon. Under current regulations, we cannot use that $265,000 for such purposes and have in the past used unrestricted general fund money instead. Under HB 2064-1, we could use the $265,000 for these beautification maintenance projects and thus free up general fund money, for example, to help pay for our first badly needed increase in police staffing in many years. This shift of funds, this more efficient application of funds, has a lot to do with how many people are in town and the impacts of tourism on Ashland that we need to absorb. I also agree with removing sidewalks and parking from the previous draft out of respect for the concerns of our lodging industry, with whom we have a close and collaborative relationship. And that's all I've got to add today. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much. Questions for this panel? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. Wendy, question for you, I guess, from LOC's perspective. And I think you know kind of where I come from on this issue and what my local area is most interested in. I would just point out, members, there's a letter and all this from Sheriff Matt English, who is our Hood River County Sheriff, that he wrote in collaboration with the Oregon Sheriff's Association and has their backing on this as well. But my area is not so much interested in infrastructure. We're interested in support for our public safety entities that are being stretched beyond their ability to provide for public safety. due to the huge volumes of folks that we have, you know, in the gorge, and just to show, you know, demonstrate how recreational tourism has changed and the demands it puts upon our public aid entities. You know, I'm sure you all have come up the Hood River in the summer and watched all the colorful sails and kite boarders, and fun to watch all of them. But what you're not noticing or perhaps realizing is the Hood River County Sheriff's deputies have to be out there patrolling that now. And they are not budgeted for that, okay? You don't have a byline in their budget, you know, to as well as every time you see a search and rescue on Mount Hood, that requires public safety involvement. Every time you see someone falling and injuring themselves hiking on a trail in the gorge, which is happening more and more frequently, those are all constraints put upon public safety folks. So my question is the language on page 2 broad enough to allow for our Hood River County Sheriff's Office to be able to gather some support that could help with increased personnel costs as a result of massive increases in tourism in the gorge?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Johnson, it was carefully crafted, and this is lines 17 through 20 on page 2 of the Dash 1 amendments. The amendment would allow restricted money to be used for tourism activities and tourism generating special events and sporting events. So this is similar to what was passed for the state tax, and when that passed, as you know, there's the big Eugene track event coming, and one of those issues was the public safety that you will need for that those types of athletes and the congestion and such. And so the costs that are associated with the activities and the events, so any of the sailing competitions and activities, those costs that are directly related to that are intended to be covered by the language of the bill. And in my testimony, I noted that we are not asking to use restricted lodging tax dollars for public safety generally or for roads generally. It has to be tied to a tourist activity. But we all know, in talking with the Hood River folks, we know that you can't get a cop for the 2 months of the year. You have the overtime problem, and that's the cost that these communities are having to absorb for the tourist activities. And so if the language is intended to cover those costs, and I mean, that's our position, that's what these words will do, is allow for costs for these tourism activities, especially events. It will not allow for search and rescue, I don't believe, the way it's written, because that's not really, unless you can stretch it to activities, but it wasn't intended. But it will free up the budget line for the sheriffs and the police in our cities, because it will allow some flexibility for those public safety costs that are related to tourism that have put the budgets at such risk.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Other questions for this panel? Representative Benson, please.
Thank you. Looking at some of the materials, that the original concept underlying the tax was to generate additional lodging stays where visitors spend money on accommodations, restaurants, blah, blah, blah. The justification for moving beyond that is that there's so much money there now, we don't need to do that any longer, or some other better argument?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, the justification for the state tax had those purposes. The local tax was an individual, city by city, county by county decision. The preemption was a part of the deal, and my look at the legislative history was that this was never suggested that we needed, that locals wanted this preemption. So I don't know the answer to your question, because for each community, they impose the tax for a different reason. Many of them, you know, have high property taxes, and still they bring in more lodging taxes than they do property taxes just by the town, because it's a tourist town. And so they impose the tax to deal with their services and the costs of those tourists. So putting heads in beds may have been the intent of the state tax, but each individual community, I would argue, has a different reason for why they originally imposed the tax.
Thank you.
Let me rephrase the question a little bit. There are costs to having tourists in a town. My understanding, if I read this amendment correctly, is that you would like the tourists to help pay part of that cost. Mm-hmm. In addition to paying for promotion. Have I understood that correctly?
Chair Barnhart, that's exactly right. it's narrowly done to continue it to go right to back to the tourist costs, not broader than that. But that's my initial frustration, though, in the league and AOC's position at the beginning was we should have never been preempted in the first place. But if we are...
Well, that's 2003.
Right.
14 years ago, that's
right.
Know, that's gone. Let's talk about
so
today.
If we are, let's at least tie it back to tourism and continue to use the money for tourism, but provide more flexibility on what that looks like.
Let me follow up on that just a little bit. It seems to me that if, and I think you said this, it seems to me that if you invest in services that are aimed at tourists and at decor, such as the flower boxes in Ashland, aimed at tourists, and at facilities aimed at tourists, you're more likely to get repeat business from the tourists that came originally as a result of the marketing plan. Is that a reasonable thought on my part?
Chair Barnard, that's what we believe.
All right. Yes, please.
I'd like to offer, I think, a complimentary, hopefully, spin on that in that, you know, on the one hand, we'd like to be able to account for costs. But on the other hand, I think we feel that if we had more flexibility to use the restricted portion of our lodging tax revenue, we could more effectively market through the quality of the services and the different investments that we're making in our amenities and our events. If we lose the Cascade Cycling Classic, for example, as a result of the lack of public safety funding, that's an extraordinary hit, not just for tourism, but for the community that enjoys that as well. So we see it in that more holistic fashion, not just covering the cost, but rounding out the entire effort to be successful.
Does that event fill restaurant seats and hotel beds?
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know anything about the event.
I can actually submit some details for your okay. consideration.
Right.
It's pretty remarkable, though.
I think we're about to learn more about the event. Representative Buehler.
Thanks, Chair Barnhart. It also fills emergency room beds, too, I think.
Which
is okay with me.
This event in particular, I think.
Out of network raids, too.
Yeah.
So.
Knee repair.
That one's billing.
Yeah. Oh, here we go.
Here we go. All right.
Yeah.
So, get outside.
Oh, yeah, I'll bring it back in.
Please, go ahead.
So a question about definitions. So the word beautification is used. Is that a word that's defined in statute anywhere so that we have clarity on what that means? We heard from the mayor of Ashland that meant flower baskets and the such. What else would you think that entails?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Buehler, it's not defined in statute. The trouble with present statute is it has to be a durable good or something. It's had to be at least 10 years, and most of these things just don't last that long. Mm-hmm. So we didn't want to call it landscaping or because it depends on whether you're dealing with snow and, you know, the mountains or mm-hmm. or where it might be. But it's those things that, you know, I think it'd go to the dictionary definition of beautification.
What would that mean? Does that mean murals on the side of buildings, or that mean streetlights? Would that mean sculptures? What exactly does that, it seems a very broad term.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Buehler, it is. I think it's intentionally broad, but it's providing flexibility back to the community. I think if I don't know if the art projects would fit there. I think we could have used a different word. This is really about making sure the upkeep in some communities dealing with the trash, and it's dealing with the landscaping. Those are the things that were cited by most of our smaller communities and medium-sized communities that they need to have a good experience when they get there, and we don't have the resources for those for the tourist places. When all the hundreds of thousands of people come to the beach, we have to clean up the beach and make sure it's cleaned up. It's hard to capture what those were, how to define that.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Well, just to follow up to Representative Buehler's question, and I guess my concern would be that it does seem a bit overly broad in some ways, I guess. I would hope that we wouldn't be, you know, advocating bailing out local jurisdictions on infrastructure and or just basic maintenance that should be a part of their budget. You know, and again, I'll get back. My interest in this is not so much Ben's interest, I'll be frank. You know, they're talking about infrastructure. I'm talking about public safety support, where there is a real interest on the part of the community and who are being disenfranchised, frankly, because their sheriff's department is being stretched so thin that they can't respond to normal occurrences because of their necessity that they are absorbed by tourist-related, you know, interests. So, but I'm just, you know, just, it does seem a little broad to me.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Johnson, I'll respond on this one that I think these, it depends on the community. Representative Lewis from Silverton, this is an issue for their community that hundreds of people are coming now to the Oregon Gardens, but downtown Silverton doesn't look so great. There are parts that are improving, but the parks and the restrooms and such there, they'd like to make sure it looks welcoming because there's nothing else to do besides go to the garden itself. But it's that including but not limited to beautification goes with the phrase before it. And so it has to fit into the developing or improving the tourist industry by enhancing the attractions, facilities, and the events. So it, I believe it is narrowly tailored to those places that are the attractions, facilities, and events. So it's not your general fund issues. It's the tourist places that it's that go into this beautification category.
Okay, Representative Benz?
Yeah, to follow up on that question, what about sidewalks?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, we removed sidewalks from the bill. The language from this bill came from the House Economic Development and Trade, and that language was taken out.
Right, but my question is, when I read it, it says development follow-up.
Please, yeah.
Yeah, it says that developing and improving by enhancing tourist attractions, facilities, or generating special, and so beautification projects and constructing tourist amenities, a sidewalk would appear to me to be a pretty important thing for a tourist.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, I believe if a sidewalk fits, it would still have to fall under the old definition of facility. It doesn't fit under the new for promotion.
I was just thinking of downtown Silverton. Not that they don't have sidewalks, but the representative's question about how broad the language is. So you're taking us back to what part of the bill to suggest a narrowing?
In the Dash 1 amendment, beautification goes with the phrase develop, and it's including but not limited to. So it has to, it's modified that phrase of tourism promotion. So it's on line 23 is the beautification line, but it goes under tourism promotion, and under tourism promotion, it's developing or improving the tourism industry. That's on line 21. By enhancing tourist attractions, tourism-related facilities, or tourism-generating special events, including. So this is an example of what that looks like, but if a court were to interpret it, they would still have to find that whatever is being done, the sidewalk, is part of an attraction, a facility, or a special event.
Relying on the word and.
Correct.
A lot. Mm. Thank you.
All right, okay. Any other questions for this panel? Mayor Stromberg, given the conversation, did you want to add any final comment?
No, I just think that the careful wording is important because we're balancing the interests and perspectives of the lodging industry with the need of the community to present a good face and a good context for all the tourism attracting activities that we put on here. And it's always, in terms of budgeting, it's always those maintenance things that are so mundane, their impact is not realized unless you're actually in the business and understand how people react to a town that looks fresh and beautiful. So anyway, I think you've had a very meaningful conversation today. I appreciate the chance to be part of it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And you're welcome to stay on, or you can watch the rest of the hearing on our website, either as you prefer.
Thank you very much. I'm going to prepare for my budget committee.
Ah, all righty.
Thanks.
A lot. You know how to do that. Okay. Thank you. We'll call the next panel.
Thank you.
Linda Gardner, Bill Perry, Scott Youngblood.
Thank you.
Please go ahead.
Okay. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm Linda Gardner, and I'm here representing Expedia, Inc. Expedia is an American travel company located in the Pacific Northwest. It owns and operates several online travel brands, including Expedia, Travelocity, Hotels.com, as well as online short-term vacation rental sites HomeAway and VRBO. Earlier in the session, I testified on behalf of Expedia, expressing concerns about the language of HB 2049. The Dash 1 amendments to HB 2064, although they contain slightly different language, exhibit many of the same problems contained in HB 2049. We believe that the language is unworkable in several respects and could present undesirable and unforeseen consequences. I want to insert here that I'm testifying today against the Dash 1 amendments. We're not for or against the Dash 2 amendments, and we haven't had time to study the Dash 4 amendments. We're especially concerned about the language contained in Section 8 of the Dash 1 amendments. This language relates to local transient lodging taxes. Section 8 would require every transient lodging tax collector, which is defined in the statute or with it as amended, to include travel agents, internet travel platforms, hotels, airlines, vacation rental owners, and property managers, and requires all of them to collect and remit transient lodging taxes. At best, this section relating to local transient lodging taxes is complicated, confusing, and unworkable. At worst, it exposes tourists and guests to double or multiple taxation for the same rental. By contrast, ORS 320.305, which applies to the state transient lodging tax, would continue the same taxation collection and remittance regime currently applicable to both the state and local transient lodging tax. It specifically requires the transient lodging tax collector who receives consideration rendered for occupancy of the transient lodging to collect the tax. This provision is clear and workable. The Dash 1 amendments would set up two different taxation regimes for state transient lodging taxes and local transient lodging taxes. Because the new local transient lodging tax regime in the Dash 1 amendments would require multiple parties to collect the taxes for the same occupancy and subject hotel and short-term lodging guests to multiple taxation for the same occupancy, and because it would set up the two separate tax collection regimes for the state and local tourism taxes, we request that you reject the Dash 1 amendments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen.
He's referring to you.
It's as though Chair Barnhart knows. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on House Bill 2064 and the amendments being considered. My name is Scott Youngblood. I'm the general manager of the Embassy Suites Hotel at Washington Square. Ours is the largest hotel in Washington County, the fourth largest in our beautiful state, and as such, I'm fairly aware of the importance which Oregon's strategic tourism investments mean to our economy. I also recognize and acknowledge the difficult funding challenges facing our local governments. Dollars spent in my hotel and other hotels throughout Washington County are already contributing to local governments, and we already do an awful lot to contribute to the general infrastructure and other local government needs not directly tied to sales, marketing, and promotion. Private businesses, local destination marketing organizations, chambers of commerce, together with our statewide tourism efforts, play an important and cooperative role in driving the positive economic returns, which in turn benefit local governments under the current law. Oregon's efforts to increase visitor spending is an intentional economic strategy that benefits all of Oregon. The current lodging tax structure was based on thoughtful and visionary legislation that the industry and local governments agreed to more than a dozen years ago, of course. Given our current economic climate of uncertainty, an effort that would undermine the investment structure that has performed so admirably since 2003 should be rejected. Money spent to attract visitors to communities like Portland, or Bend or Ashland don't just benefit those communities, but also the smaller and rural communities along the ways as travelers stop for meals, fuel, shopping, agritourism experiences across our beautiful state. Visitors to Oregon generate robust economic returns for the state and help create and sustain 109,500 tourism jobs to the benefit of our local communities. In fact, our travel industry is one of the top three export-oriented industries in rural Oregon counties. These investments don't occur accidentally, and the inspiration to have these uniquely Oregon experiences are carefully curated and executed by tourism partners and professionals at every touch point of our visitors' experience. Just like local governments, our costs continue to escalate year after year, and so as a business, I need to respond to escalating costs. Unlike local governments, however, I don't have the ability to seek local tax solutions to support my local needs. My ability to address rising costs is limited to increasing rates or booking more suites. We have all suites. If adopted into law, these proposed amendments will affect my business, even if my local jurisdiction doesn't take these actions. We're dependent on all of the communities around us doing their part to help bring visitors to Washington County, as well as other communities that contribute to the Oregon experience, like Ashland, like Bend, that benefit our entire state as they promote their area and increase overall visitors coming into our Oregon. Recently, we've been very successful promoting the state because tourism-generated tax dollars have been stable and continue to be invested intelligently. Please help us in not undermining the legislation that's made this possible and allowing these dollars to be siphoned, putting local tourism marketing organizations at risk. I'm happy to answer questions, but am especially happy to have you hear from Mr. Perry.
Thank you.
Chair Barnard, members of the committee, for the record, Bill Perry at the Oregon Restaurant Lodging Association. And first, I kind of want to put this in perspective. So of all the local taxes raised, Eco Northwest did a study a few years back, and 52% of the local taxes statewide go to something other than tourist general fund, you know, specific projects or different things. 30% of the dollar goes to tourism-related facilities. I know the previous panel said that the tourism-related facilities isn't workable, but 30% goes to that. Only 18% goes to tourism marketing currently. So the smallest percentage of local dollars raised goes to marketing. So any change you make to marketing, you're eroding from that smallest percentage. Let's just be bluntly honest here. Okay. Now we look at the two examples, Ashland and Medford, or Ashland and Bend. Just so you guys know, roughly it's percentages of percentages, but about 65% of those local dollars goes to general fund, 35% goes to marketing. So majority of the local taxes are going to general fund, okay? Now, they always say we don't need more marketing, but I'll give you the example of Bend, and he can correct me if I'm wrong. They collected $3 million more last year than they expected, okay? $3 million more, which means they get $2 million more in general fund. And we do get another $1 million for marketing. But like Mr. Youngblood says, my costs are going up too. And the only way we can increase costs is to increase demand. We either have to raise our prices or we have to get more people staying at our hotels. But the other thing you need to think about is those two communities are not the only ones that benefit from marketing in Central Oregon. Sisters benefits. Madras benefits, you know, Redmond benefits, because people travel, they buy gas, they stop for lunch. This is an integrated system, and I know people think, well, maybe we don't want to spend more money in Bend or Ashland, but every dollar spent in every community is going to help the surrounding communities in the rest of the state pay more in gas taxes, because remember, tourists pay gas taxes when they use the road. That's what a user fee is for. It allows those things to be paid for as they move forward. And so, you know, I think Representative Bentz had a good point. I mean, the question really does get down into, today you can use these dollars for marketing events. You can use them for events. You can use them for Cascade Lakes. You can use them for all these different events. Now, the question is how much do you expand that definition to what you can use for? Okay, so when we look at the it was brought up about the track town. Okay, they can use those dollars for security. They can use those dollars. I could argue that you can use the state and local promotion dollars for security, too. Now, can we get at the crux of, can you use it for overtime in sheriff's department? And the question is, I don't think I know. There's attorneys on this panel. They can answer that question. To my knowledge, it has never been brought up. Okay? Has the Hood River County Sheriff said, there's a specific windsurfing event that we're going to need overtime for. Can we apply to pay for that overtime? That question has never been answered. And I don't know, to be specific, because you are now talking about a specific event and a specific cost. Is there a connection? Nobody's applied for that. And so we don't know the answer to that specific question. Now, can you use for general fund in general? No. But, you know, the question of the sidewalk, is that different than the flower pots? I don't know. And that's what I was saying is they say it's kind of limited, but it's not. And I also just want to bring up one more point, and then I'll quit, is, you know, we keep talking this about a community-to-community basis. So say you use $50,000 in Ashland for flower pots. I know Tillamook and Cascade Locks wants to use it for flower pots. Say you have 10 communities that want to use benches. Say you have 3 or 4 that want to do light posts. When you look at all those, there may be $50,000 to $100,000 on an individual basis. But now you're talking about millions of dollars out of the state infrastructure. So it's affecting everybody in this industry once you start taking pieces. The last speakers said that, yeah, there's a lot of communities that said they won't change. But by that, I'm implying that she said there are a lot of communities that will change. And that's when you really start to impact the infrastructure. This is a system set up like all the other systems where you have a statewide tax for infrastructure. This is not a preemption. This is a restriction. I understand that. But you have the same thing for roads. You do roads at a statewide level. You do roads at a local level. You do advertising at a statewide level. You do advertising at a local level. We've allowed more flexibility in the current structure today for local flexibility of advertising than you have with roads. And so you need to make sure that all aspects of the infrastructure have an ability to participate in this. So the hotel needs to advertise, the local government needs to advertise, and the state needs to advertise if we're going to do it well. What happened before 2003 was a local DMO, a destination marketing organization, used to have $500,000, say. But then all of a sudden you need lampposts or you need sheriffs or whatever. You go in and you take $100,000 from them. Their ability to effectively market in the long term has diminished. Not even if you don't take the money, how do they write a long-term contract knowing that that's a possibility? So if you do this, anything that opens up ambiguity to this statute, you have put at risk the way the locals can market in that infrastructure, and it affects the operators and the state. It just will, because you're going to have jurisdictions that are going to take full advantage. The other thing that I will say, there's another big piece that automatically swipes, is on page 5, lanes 12 through 18. This changes the date from July 1 to July 2, okay? There were a couple of cities that when we were going through this debate in 2003, Bend being one of them, they tried to cram through a tax before the legislature left. And so they passed it during the legislative session and implemented it on July 1. And basically what the legislature said was, you knew we were doing this. You had full aware. We warned you. We did everything else. So that is effectively inside the 70-30 split. They want that one date change, so that takes those revenues outside the 70-30 split. And I know there's at least 2 cities that do it. So current marketing dollars right there will be swept out the door. And I think it's more than $1 million right there without any of the other changes. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Representative Marsh, please.
Yes, I have a thank you, Chair. Could you a clarification from the lady from Expedia. Can you explain to me why you asserted that the language here requires multiple collection of taxes from the same individual?
Because it makes Section 8, line 7, makes every transient lodging tax collector responsible for collecting any local transient lodging tax. And the definitions of transient lodging tax collector includes intermediaries as well as the provider. And there are multiple intermediaries.
Where is that definition? What section?
Follow-up question?
Section 8.
So could you be satisfied with some additional language in here to specify that it's the assigned transient lodging tax collector for a specific situation?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear it.
Well, is this a language issue here that you need additional clarification?
Yeah, it's very much a language issue.
Okay. It's not a functional problem.
Well, it is a functional problem in the sense that there should be clarity in the law as to who is responsible for collecting, and only one party should be responsible for collecting. Otherwise,
right.
You're either going to have multiple collections or a great deal of incoherency.
Representative Nose?
Thank you, Chair Barnhart. I'm confused as well. I had the same question as Representative Marsh did, and I couldn't figure out how to phrase it, so I'm struggling with this. What I'm unclear about is, are you saying you should not have to pay the tax, or are you saying your entities are willing to be the collector, but the language is unclear, or it makes it seem like you'll have to pay it multiple times?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Nose, the person who receives the consideration should be the person who pays the tax, just as it is in for the state and in current statute. At the very least, that is clear. Rather than having, I'm going to try to think of an example, and it might not be a very good one, but think of it from the perspective of the provider, the hotel, for example, who is responsible under both the state, the current law, which is how it would continue to be, for the state in the Dash 1 amendments. The hotel is responsible if they receive the consideration. But suppose that an intermediary is involved and does one of, or maybe more than one intermediary, does more than, and either receives a fee or commission with respect to the occupancy and then requires the hotel to collect. Well, we've got two people who are required to collect the tax in that circumstance. I'm telling you that it's at the very least inartfully drafted.
Follow up?
Yes, please.
Okay. I'm sorry I'm not getting it, but I'm going to keep hanging with it because I think this is important. So I could see where a municipality or a county government would want to say the facilitator of the rental, the facilitator of the experience, you collect that tax because we have more certainty that we'll be able to get it from you than Representative Nose, who is using your website to get my place rented. Maybe I think to charge Representative Johnson the tax. Maybe I don't. Maybe I'm being fast and loose with it and I don't even bother, you know, or I've just got one rental and I can sort of get around this whole thing. Yet, as an Airbnb person or whatever it is, I'm certainly benefiting from other entities like hotels paying, you know, some share of the tax so that there's flower pots and sidewalks and whatever we want to spend it on. And so my interest is making sure that everybody that's benefiting from tourism, including, you know, offering my home or room or garage or whatever for tourists to come and stay, should pay as well as any hotel or B&B.
That's correct, but perhaps you have an intermediate. I understand that everyone benefits from it, but suppose you have an intermediate. I'm sorry.
Please go ahead.
Chair Barnhart. Yeah.
I think there is a question embedded in this statement, and I think you're about to answer it.
Suppose you have an intermediary who is receives a commission from the hotel or the short-term vacation rental or whatever. That, under this new regime, that person is responsible, so is the owner of the property or the hotel or the manager, whoever receives the consideration at the end. So you've got two parties responsible. How are you going to know which person has paid, who is responsible for making sure that the tax is paid? You're going to either have nobody paying or two people paying, or maybe if you're lucky, one person paying. I'm suggesting to you that this is very unclear, and it creates a lot of confusion at the very best, and potential multiple liability for the renter at the worst.
Right. I think the intent of the thing, if I can speak for it, is that the person who actually receives the consideration initially is the one responsible for paying the tax. If I work through an intermediary, and I put my credit card number in the internet to pay the entire hotel bill, then what I think is intended is that intermediary is responsible then to report and pay the tax. On the other hand, if I show up at the desk and I hand my credit card to the desk clerk at the hotel, and they're the ones who receive the money, then the hotel is responsible for collecting, accounting for, and paying the tax. I think that's the intent. I also think that the language is ambiguous. And I think I'm not sure which of those is your point. If your point is that the language is ambiguous, I think you're right, and we probably need to work on it. If you're wondering, should the intermediary ever be responsible for paying the tax, I think that's a policy question, and I believe the intent of this amendment is that, yes, indeed, when the intermediary collects the money, then the intermediary should be responsible for accounting for and paying the tax. I think that's the intent of the amendment, and if it's not, maybe we'll ask Wendy to come back and talk about that. Please, go ahead.
Yeah, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, Bill Perry of Restaurant Lodging Association. This is obviously a section of, or that portion that we're talking about is from 2049, which we had talked about. And I know Department of Revenue and us sat down because of the exact same thing. From our philosophical standpoint, whoever collects the money should be collecting the tax. When we went through the ones with the intermediaries, I can never pronounce the word, so you can struggle with me through that. What we wanted to make sure is there were jurisdictions that sometimes when those companies collected the money and the local governments didn't get it, they came after the operator. So we just wanted to make sure that there was protection. And so my understanding of what is happening in some of the local house rentals or anything else where you have two to three owners, you need to make sure that they're all liable because just because of ownership interests and different things. So this is not exactly like, Mazen might be able to correct me, exactly like the language that we worked with the Department of Revenue on for 2049. So I haven't seen if it accomplishes the same thing. But if you look at the -1 amendments to 2049, they're closer, or that's what we worked out that I think accomplishes the technical questions, but there's still obviously the policy issue. Those are also, my understanding, the -4 amendments here. So I'd rather go back to 2049, but you guys have the votes. I don't. If you want to accomplish that problem and make me happy, you would deal with the -4s in this bill.
I got you.
But, I'd have to check to make sure it's not exactly word for word what we had to discuss with the Department of Revenue, but I think it is trying to accomplish the same thing.
So if we left out the material in the -1 amendment that refers to this issue and substituted the material in the -4 amendment, that would deal with this issue, you think?
Well, Chair Barnard, members of the committee, I think the language in both the -1s and -4s as it relates to this issue is identical. I just don't, without looking at it, I'm not sure it matches the -1 amended version of 2049. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. Okay.
Different language.
There's different language.
The two amendments we're dealing with today on this topic are identical. It's not identical to what we had worked on 2049.
No, it is.
It's
not identical.
It isn't. It's not identical. I refer you to Section 8 of the Dash 1 amendment.
Oh.
That doesn't show up anywhere in the Dash 4 amendment.
Okay.
And that I think that's what you're talking about, is the Section 8.
That is what I'm talking about. And also, the definition of intermediaries is slightly different. I did notice that on my
right.
phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's something okay. that needs to be cleared up, and we'll look into that further.
Yeah.
Anything else for this panel? I have another panel.
Yeah,
yes,
just really quickly,
please.
I would say I think the interpretation of the clarity or lack thereof is in the eye of the beholder. If you read the letter from the mayor of Wilsonville,
yeah.
he says the bill provides for increased accountability for the correct remittance of transient lodging taxes and so forth. So,
right.
But it would seem that there is some differences of opinion, so there may be needs for greater clarity, Mr. Chair.
Well, and I think that in dealing with tax law, who's actually supposed to collect and pay the tax is a pretty important topic, and the Dash 8 doesn't, or excuse me, the Section 8 of the Dash 1 doesn't get us there,
okay.
I think. Representative Bass.
Mr. Chair, I only want to, this just brings back the conversation way too long of several years ago where we went around and around on what it was that the intermediary was actually doing, and whether it was a part of the fee or not. And I almost didn't bring it up, but I certainly don't want to overlook that element of this challenging drafting.
It's another interesting
thing.
Problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it is useful to know that that the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association thinks the Dash 4 amendment gets us there on that issue. That's helpful.
No, I
don't think that.
No, I said that if it's the same as 2049-1, I thought it was different. I haven't had enough time to digest it.
Okay.
So that's what I don't know.
It is the same?
It is.
It
same.
Is
okay.
the same.
Okay.
Okay. All right. And it is a whole lot clearer than Section 8
yeah.
of the Dash 1. No question. All right. Thank you very much. I have another panel to go, and we're running out of time, so let's get on with that. Bill Cross, Danielle, is it Cohen?
Cowan.
I don't see Bill. He left a minute ago.
He had a meeting. He still left.
Okay. And then following you will be Gil Riddell. Is there anyone else who wants to be heard today? Okay. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, members of the committee and Representative Chair Barnhart. My name is Danielle Cowan. I'm the Executive Director for Oregon's Mount Hood Territory, also known as Clackamas County Tourism and Cultural Affairs. I serve as the Vice President of Oregon Destination Marketing Organization, which is ODMO, who Bill is going to speak to if he can be here before the end of this hearing. And I also served as a member of the 2016 Interim Task Force, or work group, I think we called it, on the TLT. So I think I have a broad perspective here. And just to top things off, I used to work in the city of Wilsonville in 2003 when all the legislation happened. So I feel like I'm very well-rounded. As I was sitting here, I know that each of you have already received the testimony from my Tourism Development Council Chair, John Erickson, who had to leave to Chicago this morning, could not be here. I believe you also have testimony from the ODMO board. Both of those testimonies are wished for you to not support these amendments as drafted. I understand the back and forth, and I wanted to just make a few points that may not be contained in that in those pieces of testimony, and to add some further thought that I don't think has been considered by the legislative body at this point. Well, we do know that it has a huge impact, tourism does, on rural and communities as well as the rest of Oregon. It's no more true anywhere than it is in Clackamas County, the home of Mount Hood. We've been wildly successful. I'll give you that. When Ms. Johnson referred to the 30% and the fact that everything had grown up now to $150 million, I think that it's important to keep in mind that that means that 30% available to cities has also increased by that much. And I was doing a quick little math, and their share has grown to $45 million for the local communities in that scenario. So whenever tourism and the impacts of tourism grow, it also increases the percentage that goes to the local communities. But the thing I wanted to focus on that is a little bit different is the idea, I feel like people just skim really quickly over advertising and have the old school sort of mindset. You're putting some ads up and you're driving people, and I even heard it in earlier testimony, driving people to the summers and the seasons where it's overcrowded. That's the opposite of what we actually do. We use our money to drive to the off-season, not to the on-season. So without our work, I think what you would have is an abundance of people coming in the season, overcrowding the communities, and not understanding how to disperse through the year or through the state. And so my team, and I know all of my colleagues' teams, spend a lot of time encouraging and working on folks to go to places that may not be common and at seasons where you may not actually think you'd want to travel. And that's where we really focus our energies. And we focus a lot of energies these days into experiences. People want to understand experiences, so we do a lot of education. We try to help them to understand how to behave on the mountain, where to go on the mountain, how to dress, and when to go, and where to stay off of. So what you determine to be advertising and just kind of tossing that aside as maybe it's just a luxury is actually critical to the operation of exactly what it is that you're looking for. You're looking for off-season, dispersed clientele. But when you dilute the marketing dollar and the development dollar, you are essentially, allowing and encouraging the exact behavior that we were trying to fix. And granted for us, it's gotten a lot more expensive and more difficult. The social media, all of that stuff that has to happen now is extremely expensive and difficult to stay on top of. It requires a lot of man and woman power to accomplish. And I also want to say we did add development into the use of tourism dollars. We've always done this in Clackamas County. So when the local communities say that they don't know that they're benefiting, I'll just say in Clackamas County alone, we return $600,000 each year to the local communities for local projects that are grant monies. We also do training, collaboration. We work with them on developing their museums, their sites, to be a stronger, more robust economy. We do capacity building at the local level. Right. So I think that please just focus for a moment on those other kinds of activities that this money actually pays for, and broaden, hopefully, in your mind the definition of what advertising and marketing are about, and also that we do development. I ask that, and my colleagues ask, let's not eat the seed corn. We have grown the pot of this money, and so everyone can benefit. Please allow us to continue to do that and to do so responsibly and get the results that it is that you and we are hoping to accomplish. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Marshall.
Thank you, Chair. Could you talk just a little bit more about the projects that are returned to local communities and what those communities can do with that project money?
Clackamas County is very invested in our local community infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And we have devoted a lot of our funds to develop our tourism infrastructure. We use tourism-related, version of transient lodging tax. It was pre-2003. Mm-hmm. 98% of our funds go to tourism marketing and development. Nothing goes back into outside of the 2% for the administration. So our county is very committed to this. We have developed experiences at farms. We've invested in trails. We've invested in all sorts of things that build that tourism infrastructure, because in our opinion, it's really difficult to market an experience that doesn't actually exist or is a bad experience. We worked on things as diverse as keeping the rest area open up at government camp, and that was going to be closed because that's a very important tourism infrastructure piece. So it's those kinds of things, and they apply for grants. It's a competitive grant process, and...
Follow up?
Yes, please. Uh-huh.
Thank you. So the grant program, what kind of things do they apply for with the grant program? This is the Linger Longer program, is that as I understand it?
Yeah. Chair Barnhart, thank you, and Representative Marsh. It's true, the Linger Longer, Clackamas County invests in that because we don't have a lot of tourism infrastructure out in some of our rural areas as far as overnight stays. But we do want people to stay there longer and not just do drive-bys and actually invest in our community. So we've had people apply for lots of different activities. We've invested in the river walk, for instance, at Oregon City, where the Legacy Project, which maybe you're familiar with, we invest in just a variety of things. Museums ask for different kinds of assistance, and we provide those. We offer small community grants, so we give $20,000 to each of our 13 communities, and they in turn grant those out to local projects. And we also have a larger development grant program that has $250,000 in it that people make application for, and they can do projects up to $100,000. And as long as they're visitor-facing, tourism-related, and they make sense, and they're not at the cost of doing business by a particular business, then it's very possible that it would be funded.
One more.
Please.
Thank you. So those kind of projects, those little projects that really feed our local communities, sound to me a lot like the language that we're suggesting to go into this, to simply allow those kinds of activities to take place within other communities. Doesn't it seem like a parallel to you?
Yes, it actually does to me. But our language talks about tourism promotion and development in our county code. And so that's what we go on, and we use the visitor definition out of the state language, which is it has to be for facilities and items that are visitor-facing, and visitor being someone that comes from more than 50 miles and or spends the night.
Sorry, one more question.
Yeah, please.
Thank you, and this will be it. So just to sum up, though, you found those kinds of community-based investments and projects to be worthwhile in terms of supporting the community, the tourist economy.
Representative Barnhart and Chair Barnhart and Representative Marsh, yes, but there has to be a but there, because we would not invest, for instance, in flower pots in a community. We would not, but we would invest probably into bicycle racks in a bicycle facing community infrastructure. So we've invested in a bicycling plaza in Estacada. So it depends on its use. We have had the requests for flowers and such, but that it once a visitor is here, it's not a tool. It's what we're looking for are those kinds of amenities that actually drive tourists here. And so a flower pot, while lovely, is not the thing that is going to make you want to travel. Our job is to inspire people to come here and spend their money, and they do spend a lot of it. And they invest in our communities, and they keep. The other thing I just want to point out, too, that we tend to forget about is the visitor is really the first step to the relationship building where someone might actually want to locate a business or their families in your communities. And it builds the brand and the inspiration for them to want to be here. And that's another piece that has not been talked about in these hearings. And I think that's an extremely important part. It's also a piece that we found with products. When you go out and you test the product out in the wine or whatever, then pretty soon it gets a cachet or an interest, and before you know it, you're actually shipping across the globe as we are today.
Thank you. Mr. Cross, you got back here in time.
Perfect, Mr. Chair.
Keep it as short as you can, please. I have two other people to hear, and I'd like to get a couple of work sessions done this afternoon if I can.
Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name is Bill Cross. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Destination Marketing Organizations, ODMO, and we are opposed to the proposed amendments. We have concerns about what the impact will be on a program that, as you've heard, from 2003 has built a base in many communities for a fairly vibrant tourism industry. And it takes years to build up a successful marketing program. And to have the uncertainty that you could now, a local jurisdiction could further delete that commitment to the marketing program of a community would and could affect your long-term marketing strategies, which in many cases are 3, 5, 7 years to get into San Francisco or Seattle to build that, you know, reputation and name. So we are very concerned, especially since the proposed amendments, such as beautification, et cetera, actually, from a personal standpoint, I would be fine with this because I live in Silverton, and finally we'd have sidewalks, which would be welcome. But you could use the monies for virtually anything. And that would be a concern, obviously, for the tourism industry, for the jobs that it has created over the years. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you very much. Any additional questions? Thank you. We very much appreciate your testimony. Mr. Riddell, and then we'll ask Mark Garst from the department to come up as well. I'm sorry, not Mark. The note was signed by him, and so, oh, I see. I didn't read the whole note. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please, you get to close, and then we get to talk technical.
Okay. Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. I know my time is very limited, but I would like to do three things quickly. First of all, clear up a couple of points you heard from the previous panel. Second, give comments for MAOC, and then third, summarize the letter that you have in OLIS from Sheriff English, and all that can be done very quickly. First of all, if Ashland and Bend are spending general funds beyond the 30% restriction that had to have been as a result of previous transit lodging taxes that they adopted in their city with their community's assent. Until 2003, the transit lodging tax had always been local. It had always been fashioned locally for local circumstances, and they were perfectly able to do that, the local folks. Counties have 15 of them, and each at least had a share of the proceeds for economic development tourism. In 2003, the state imposed a 1% state TLT tax continually appropriated to the Oregon Tourism Commission, and that was fine. But the bill didn't stop there. It imposed requirements and limitations on local TLTs under rigid definitions for specific purposes. And I was there, and I can tell you I have a body part left in this capital from those battles. They were after 100% of any new or expanded local transit lodging tax. They wanted to control it all. And the other point I want to clear up is LOC and AOC never agreed to 2267 in 2003. We fought that tooth and nail, and we were outgunned by these hordes of lobbyists who came in and ran over the top of us. But I tell you, we didn't agree to that. It was a problem. So,
if we had time, I would make comments about your response because I was on the committee that year and I remember this issue quite well. Please go ahead.
So we were able to keep 30%, a mere 30% of our of new and expanded local transit lodging taxes. We would like to have, and this is for ALC now, we strongly support the amendments. They provide several modest but important improvements to the overly rigid restrictions imposed on local transit lodging taxes, and they do not disturb the link to tourism. You could hear the sense of ownership in a previous panel about the local TLTs. Well, they're doing something with their general fund. Well, I'm sorry, but before 2003, that's how it was done. Now, I won't go into details in the bill. You've already heard that. You don't have time. Let me just say that you can see in your materials the letter from Hood River County Sheriff Matt English. He notes that tourism has exploded in recent years. The tourism promotion is working, and he's glad about that, except it has created an exponential increase in recreation-related services that the sheriff's office has to provide. Vast majority of people accessing these services are visitors. They do not pay local county property taxes, so they don't support the services they're getting. There have been, unfortunately, fatalities because of lack of public safety resources. And he notes that the additional promotion of tourism without a focus on public safety infrastructure will only exacerbate the issue. Now, he supports keeping the intended purposes narrow, and we do too, so that it will ensure that the funds are applied to public safety services that are directly accessed by tourists. And that's the bulk of the new responsibility that he has, and he needs more resources. And that's the end of my comments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Any short questions for Gil?
Amen.
Thank you. Let's talk about the technical issues.
Okay. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Xan Culver with the Department of Revenue. The Dash 4 amendment is nearly identical to provisions that are also included in the Dash 1, with the exception of the definition of transient lodging intermediary. It's a little narrower in the Dash 1 than it is in the Dash 4, and that applies to the sub C paragraph or sub C line. I can see how Section 8 in the Dash 1 could be interpreted to lead to double taxation. With the state tax, we have specific language in ORS 320.305 that specifies the transient lodging tax collector that receives consideration for the occupancy is the entity that's responsible for collecting and remitting the tax. That particular language is not in Section 8. I don't know what the intent of Section 8 was.
Okay. So, all right, let me just back up here for a second. In Section 8, it says, every transient lodging tax collector is responsible for collecting any local transient lodging tax and shall file a return. All right. So what you've said is the definition of a transient lodging tax collector is the person who receives the consideration. Have I got that right?
Chair Barnhart, no, that is not correct.
That's not right.
So the definition of transient lodging tax collector means a transient lodging provider or a transient lodging intermediary. It's in 320.305 where the state tax applies that it specifies the transient lodging tax collector, meaning the provider or the intermediary, that receives the consideration for occupancy is the entity responsible for collecting the tax.
So we have to refer to three different statutes,
yes,
to get there.
Four, actually.
All right. So it's perfectly understandable why both the person from Expedia and the chair of the committee might be confused about this. All right. Do you think that Section 8, as it's written, of the Dash 1 amendment, when proper reference is made to these other statutes, does the job? Or does it open the possibility that you're going to eventually ask two different people to pay the same tax?
Chair Barnhart, I'm not sure how the cities and counties that administer local lodging taxes would interpret this language. I don't believe the intent is to have double taxation. And what I'm saying is that could be avoided with a minor wording change.
Thank you.
But it does not currently impact the state lodging tax.
Can you work with her on that? Minor wording change. All right. Anything else? Thank you very much. We appreciate it. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2064 and open a work session on House Bill 3192. Colleagues, this is the bill that we couldn't figure out what it was doing in the Revenue Committee, and the proposal is that we send it to the Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation. Paul, did you want to add anything to that?
Mr. Chair, that's exactly my recollection.
Okay. Representative Benz?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3192A to the floor with a due pass recommendation, but subsequent referral.
Without recommendation?
Without recommendation, with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Benz moves House Bill 3192 to the floor without recommendation and with a subsequent referral by prior reference to the Committee on Ways and Means. Colleagues, I'll simply note that the bill does have a recommendation from the previous committee, and there are no revenue issues in this bill, so there's no reason at all why Ways and Means shouldn't consider the policy issue raised by the other committee to be the recommendation here. Any further discussion? Any objection to the motion? Hearing none, it is so ordered. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 3192. Can I open a work session on 148, the Scrivener's Bill? We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 148. This is the Scrivener's Bill. I'll note that there is a response from LC on the definition of resident in OLIS, which I think disposes of the issue that I was raising. And unless there's some other issue, I'm ready to move it. Representative Benz?
Sure, I move Senate Bill 148 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Benz moves Senate Bill 148 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there someone with a violent interest in carrying this bill? All right, I'll carry the bill, and we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 148. And the other one that we still have time for is Senate Bill 153. We'll open the work session on Senate Bill 153. This, as I recall, is the bill that conforms the statute to the findings or the decisions made by the Court of Appeals on a tax matter involving a couple of different taxpayers, insurance company taxpayers, around double taxation. Representative Benz?
Sure, I move Senate Bill 153A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Benz moves Senate Bill 153A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection to the motion? Hearing none, it's so ordered. Who'd like to carry that bill? All right.
I'll carry it.
Representative Benz will carry. Thank you, Representative. Appreciate that. And with that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 153. Colleagues, House Bill 2286 is still not ready for work, so we're going to carry it. Now, should I carry that over to Monday? We'll carry the work session on 2286 over till Monday. Stay tuned. Colleagues, thank you so much. We're going to try to get that fix in the bill we just heard all today so that we can work that later. And with that, committee is Monday's our next meeting, and the other meetings are subsequent to that. Yes, all right. I'll see you at 1 o'clock on Monday. Committee's adjourned. Adjourned.